to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball. The email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com, and don't forget to check out the YouTube channel as well. Another one of the Season in Review podcasts coming today. Glad you guys are enjoying them. Today, I'm going to be talking about the Charlotte Hornets. I know that's a pretty loose link to the Charlotte Hornets, but good Charlotte's as close as I could come up with. Let's enough musical reviews or enough musical talk. Let's talk basketball. Let's talk Charlotte Hornets basketball. And probably low-key, they were one of the more disappointing teams this season. Just from a real-life perspective and from a fantasy perspective, I thought that they could push themselves into the top four in the Eastern Conference. Instead, they find themselves in the top 10 of the lottery. Not a good season at all. No players really showing much from a fantasy point of view. Either only one top 50 player, and that's Kemba Walker. Big disappointments from guys like Lance Stephenson and Al Jefferson. And young guys not taking the steps that they should have. It's going to be big expectations on these guys to turn it around next season. Guys especially like Al Jefferson. Kemba Walker would want to stay healthy. We're going to see they would want to see a bounce back from Lance Stephenson. And depending on what they do with this pick, we might get some sort of impact here because there is spots available for guys. Part of the problem with the Hornets is a lot of their players aren't necessarily fantasy friendly, especially Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who we will talk about a little bit later. Let's get into it and talk about this team, break it down by position. We'll start with Kemba Walker, who was their best fantasy player this season. He started off not all that great, struggled a little bit, started getting extremely hot, and then went down with that knee injury, which caused huge problems for fantasy owners heading into their playoffs. He came back. He wasn't the same guy when he came back. He was playing limited minutes. He was sharing the ball with Mo Williams. But overall, you'd have to say his season, it was pretty good. The 38th ranked player per game for head-to-head leagues. He's a much better head-to-head guy than Roto. 59 overall for head-to-head, 88 for Roto. But as I said, down the stretch, just he wasn't able to get back his form. His last 2 weeks of action, only 12.6 points, 4.3 assists, whereas his season numbers, 17.3, 5.1. He did hit 1.5 threes and get 1.5 steals a game. The reason why he's a better head-to-head guy than a Roto guy is the fact that he shot 39% from the field on 16 attempts. That's a massive hole to sort of drag yourself out from. That's 3 out of the last 4 seasons that he's shot sub 40% from the field. Now, he's a good free throw shooter, hitting 83 this season, 84 last season. But he's one of those point guards that you need to be targeting if you're not too worried about your field goal percent. And I think that's a really viable strategy in head-to-head leagues. Now, what do we think from Kemba next season? Well, Mo Williams was a guy who didn't take his minutes, but they shared minutes when Walker came back from that knee injury. But Williams is an unrestricted free agent. Whether he comes back for next season is up in the air. Walker is their point guard of the future. There's no doubt about that. He is their best player. Definitely best perimeter player, except obviously Al Jefferson's a pretty good player too, but he is their best perimeter player. He can score, he can distribute, he can shoot threes at times. He takes a lot of bad shots, and some of that is him being not a great shooter. Some of it is not having people to rely upon on his team as shooters. This team lacks so many shooters. You look at the guys around him, Stevenson, Kidd-Gilchrist, the morass at power forward. Al Jefferson's not a good shooter. There's no marksman on this team. They'd be hoping that a guy like PJ Hairston can step up and take that role. But I think we're going to have to live with Kemba Walker's poor field goal percentage for another couple of years. That doesn't mean that I don't want him in leagues. In head-to-head leagues, great. I'm taking him inside the top 50 again in head-to-head leagues. I think that's where he'll be ranked. He's going to give you that good scoring. You might expect his assists to jump up maybe to 5 or 6. That would be fantastic if he could do that. He did average 6 in 2013-14 and 5.7 the year before that. So it's not a completely wild expectation. 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals, good scoring. There's a lot to like about Kemba Walker if you're able to go past that poor field goal percentage. Now, Mo Williams had one of the strangest seasons of anyone in the league. Started off in Minnesota, took the starting role when Ricky Rubio went down, put up a 52-point game completely out of nowhere. was great. Was almost a top 20 player in stretches when he was starting. Then he got injured, came back, put up big numbers again, double-doubles basically every night, got traded to Charlotte, took over the role with Kemba Walker injured, put up big numbers there again. The future for Mo Williams is interesting. Look, his overall numbers, he only played 29 minutes a game, 14.2 points, 1.8 threes, 6.2 assists, 0.7 steals, 87 from the line, only 40 from the field, but great numbers from Mo Williams. But so much went right for him to have those numbers. He was the 75th ranked player per game in head-to-head, 71 overall for head-to-head leagues, much lower in Roto because of his poor field goal percentage, 113. And on a per 36-minute basis, he was the 36th ranked player because he only played that 29 minutes a game. But everything went right. Rubio went down. Then he came to Charlotte. Kemba Walker wasn't there. So he got starting roles. To expect him to be a starting point guard in the NBA next season, there's a chance because people will go down and he'll be a very valuable backup. But it's going to be very hard to rely upon him. I'd be okay taking him with a last pick in the draft, that sort of thing, depending on where he ends up. But to expect him to put up top 80 value again, I don't think there's much point in doing that. But as I said, once he got the starting job, due to those injuries, superb. Big double-doubles, big scoring nights, hitting a lot of threes. He was super reliable when he got the minutes. That's the problem is he's old. Teams aren't going to be wanting to go with Mo Williams as their point guard of the future. The other point guard on this roster was Brian Roberts, who had moderate success in 2013-14 playing for New Orleans when Drew Holiday got injured. Not quite the same season here in Charlotte. He did have the opportunity when Walker went down to become the starting point guard. He did become the starting point guard. He didn't provide us anything at all, really. 6.7 points, 2.3 assists, actually a worse shooter than Mo Williams, the same as Kemba Walker, basically, shooting 38.9%, and a good free throw shooter. But his numbers are just, they're not that impressive. Never really able to get anything going, even in that situation where he was starting. Now, we don't know if Williams is going to be back. Roberts has signed on for one more season. So if Williams isn't back, we might see Roberts as that backup point guard playing 18 to 19 minutes a game. But it's only deep, deep leagues that you need to really pay attention. Per game for head-to-head leagues, 307th. That's not someone I want in 14-team leagues, 16-team leagues. He wasn't able to get it done. And even when he was starting, he wasn't worthy of a 12-team league roster spot. Shooting guards. Lance Stephenson. We have to start with Lance Stephenson. He came off a pretty good season in Indiana in 2013-14. I say pretty good because I think that his fantasy impact was overrated by a lot of people. We all know the stat of Lance Stephenson leading the league in triple-doubles in that season. That doesn't necessarily translate into fantasy goodness. Now, he was good. 13.8 points, 1-3, 7 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 0.7 steals. He was pretty good, but people were getting excited at Lance Stephenson, going, I'm going to take him in the 50s. And that was just not prudent, I didn't think. I didn't think it was a great decision. It turned out to be a horrible decision. Per game, 298th this season. 282 overall for head-to-head, and was worse down the stretch. In the last month of the season, 384th. He could not get it going. The Hornets appear they just hated him, basically, which is fair enough because he couldn't get anything going. His season numbers in 26 minutes a game, 8.2 points. He only hit 0.3 three-pointers at an absolutely horrific 17%, down from the 35% he shot the year before. 4.5 rebounds, which is okay for 26 minutes. 3.9 assists, again, that's okay. 0.6 steals and 38% shooting and 63% from the line. Overall, just a disgraceful performance from Lance Stephenson. Now, the Hornets have got him signed for another couple of seasons at $9 million, $9 million for next season, and then there is a team option for the year after at $9.4 million. He'll likely get first crack at getting that starting shooting guard job back. Does that mean that I want to take a risk on him? I'll take a risk on him with a last pick in the draft. I definitely wouldn't be touching him in the first 100 picks. And in dynasty leagues, I just don't. He's not someone to me that screams long-term fantasy value, so I don't think I'd be targeting him in that sort of situation. But to think that he's going to finish the season as 300th ranked player, again, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we'd be looking at around 110 to 130, assuming he gets his head on straight and his game recovers from what it was last season, which are all, you know, not guarantees, but the opportunity is going to be there for him to play some minutes and get another crack at that starting job. Gerald Henderson's the guy who took over from Lance Stephenson as the starting shooting guard, and he's not someone who's been historically a great fantasy player either. He's been a guy who can get points and generally not much else. He was a bit better at that this season. He got us more rebounds, more assists, 2.6 assists in 29 minutes. Doesn't seem like much, but it's better. It's better than what we really anticipated. The year before, he got the same amount of assists in 4 more minutes. So we saw his assist rate increase. He's not a guy who hits threes. He doesn't get steals. He doesn't do much else apart from score. And he was okay in stretches. I think that's the best way of putting Gerald Henderson. In roto leagues, he was a solid 99th ranked for the season. That's really good. Head-to-head, not so much. Per game, 206th. There were times when you definitely had to use him, like post-All-Star, he's 181st, but he was borderline 12-team league, and I think he's going to fall into that role of playing 26, 27 minutes, sharing the time along with Lance Stephenson at that shooting guard spot. He's not someone who's ever going to, you know, thrill us with big performances. Now, he does have a player option for next season, $6 million. You would think that he takes that value or takes that option up and plays through and tries to have a big season, but I don't think we need to really consider much about Gerald Henderson for fantasy leagues moving forward for next season. The next player we want to look at on the wing, rookie PJ Hairston, who was picked in the first round, didn't have a great season, I think that's fair to say, but he showed signs at times. Only played 15 minutes a game, but he did hit over a 3 in 15 minutes a game, which is good. You put that out to 30 minutes, that's 2 triples a game. That's useful. 5.6 points, 2 rebounds, not a lot else. Half an assist, half a steal, 32% shooting, which is really standard rookie stuff, 86% from the line. So we expect that field goal percentage to go up. It should be pushing 40, 41 next season. And if we look at his per 36s from this year, they're not too bad. 13.3 points, 2.6 threes, 4.8 rebounds, an assist, a steal. You get that field goal percentage up, and he might be someone who sneaks into 14-team league value. There's a definite hole for a shooter on this team. Stevenson's not a shooter. Gerald Henderson's not a shooter. Hairston is a shooter. He can shoot. He can hit threes. He can hit them in bunches. His percentages are going to go up. He's going to have an opportunity to take minutes away from these two guys. He's more of the future than what Henderson is and probably more than what Stevenson is. Dynasty leagues, I'm okay. I think there's significant upside for Hairston. We saw a leap a lot of the rookies from last year had this year. I think that Hairston's one of those guys who was a rookie last season who can take a leap next season, get some more minutes, play 25 minutes a game, and drop in 1.6 threes and 10 points or something along those lines. I think that's where his value is. So I'd be trying to target him in the off-season in Dynasty Leagues, get him for really low value because, you know, at a per-game ranking of 373rd, people aren't going to be too overly impressed what he was able to do. I'd be happy to try and throw some rubbish at someone and get him if they think that he's a bust and look at his poor percentages and poor output and think that, you know, Lance Stephenson and Gerald Henderson are the be-all and end-all of this team at that position. I think there's definitely something, there's a little bit there for PJ Hairston. That's well, look, and again, the other thing is they could draft a shooting guard with pick 9 in the draft, which would impact Hairston's value. Troy Daniels, another guy, he came over with Mo Williams in the trade. Not much to really talk about with him. He did hit almost a 3 a game in 9 minutes, which is impressive, but that's all his value really is. He can hit threes and he can hit big shots at times. He signed on for one more season, but he's going to be in that backup role. Jeff Taylor, a guy who suffered, he didn't suffer. He inflicted some domestic violence on his partner, suffered a big suspension, and came back. Look, he got some minutes at times, but he's not an impressive player. But the Hornets do seem to like him as a player. They do give him starting roles. He started when Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was injured. Doesn't mean we have to love him from a fantasy point of view. I don't think we'll be looking at getting him for dynasty leagues. He is a restricted free agent as well. His per game value of 440th does not inspire any real confidence. The starting small forward for this team is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who I love as a player. I don't love him as a fantasy option. But as a player, he is one of the elite defenders in the NBA. That doesn't always translate to fantasy. He's got 1 year left on his rookie deal. He'll be looking to put in a big season. And he has improved over the course of his career, which is all you can ask from for rookies. And to be that much of a plus defender as a young player, it's huge, basically. It's fantastic. And his numbers have increased. He increased his scoring. He increased his rebounding. He increased his assist numbers. He increased his free throw shooting. And for all the talk of him being a bad shooter with a broken jumper, he's hit 47, 47, and 46% of his field goals. Now, none of them are long range. He doesn't take three-pointers. I don't think he took one three-pointer all season, but he knows his limitations. He would want to be able to do that, of course, and the Hornets would love him to do that. It goes with their lack of three-point shooting that they're playing Stevenson and Henderson and Kidd Gilchrist at the two and the three, and none of them can shoot. That's why I have hope for Hairston. But the fact that he is such a good defender is something that they really value. Fantasy-wise, it's hard. It's hard with him. His value post-All-Star break, 109th in head-to-head leagues. That's pretty good. 10.3 points, 7.4 rebounds. No, sorry, they're the wrong numbers. Let me try that again. 12.2 points, 8.2 rebounds, 0.9 blocks, 0.6 steals, 48% shooting, 77 from the line. That translates as good numbers. They're solid numbers, 12 and 8. He wasn't able to do it for a sustained period of time, though. That's the problem. Yeah, per game, he's 186 for head-to-head leagues. Roto, 199th for the total of the season. He's a points guy. He gets you rebounds, and he gives you a solid field goal percentage from a wing player, which doesn't always happen. You're getting no threes. You're getting no assists. And for as great a defensive player as he is, he doesn't get any steals. He doesn't get any blocks. He did block 1.3 shots in the last month, which is a step in the right direction. But his defense is about forcing bad shots and you know, locking guys down, not necessarily forcing turnovers or blocking shots. And that doesn't really help us for fantasy. So he's a guy whose points, rebounds, field goal percentage, that's basically it for Kidd Gilchrist. I think he can get better, but I don't think he's ever going to be a great fantasy prospect. I don't think he's ever really going to be a top 80 type of guy. He might be a top 110 player at some stage in the next couple of seasons. I don't think there's any point in taking him in standard leagues. Maybe the last round of a 12-team league, potentially, if you're just looking for that 7-rebound guy off the wing, which is really valuable, but he doesn't give you much else. Aside from that, I really love watching him play. He's a fantastic defender to watch. Let's move on to the power forward position. Talk about a couple of guys here. Let's start with Marvin Williams, someone who I do not like as a basketball player at all. But he had value on this Charlotte Hornets team because of the way that they used him. They started him, inexplicably to me, over Cody Zeller for a lot of the season. And then even then when they started Cody Zeller, they would play Marvin Williams more minutes than him. He only ended up playing 26 minutes a game for 7.4 points. But where his value lied was he got you 1 3 a game. He got 5 rebounds, almost a steal. Not that it's all that valuable, but it was something. For a Roto league, he was the 106th ranked player for the entire season. That's pretty good. Head-to-head leagues, 179 per game, 137 in total. He was a guy that you had on the borderline in on and off teams over 12 and 14 team leagues. I'm hoping that there's no future for Marvin Williams in Charlotte. I know that sounds mean to say. I just don't. They've got Noah Vonleh there. They've got Cody Zeller there. Why is Marvin Williams getting the minutes? Especially on a team who was really struggling and not going into the playoffs, he shouldn't have been getting the minutes. He's got 1 year left at $7 million. I wouldn't be playing him any more than 20 minutes next season. I don't think there's anything to do with him for Dynasty League value. I'm not going to be drafting him in standard leagues. And I'm just going to have my fingers crossed that Zeller or Vonleh get the minutes. Now, let's talk about Zeller. He was a guy I was super high on at the start of the season. I thought, yep, there's a massive chance for him to take this starting job, which he should have. Look, he didn't really, when he did have the opportunity, he didn't grasp it with two hands. But he was also, he wasn't relied upon. He wasn't trusted enough. He wasn't given given the role that I would have hoped that he was given. He was on there, he'd get yanked, he wouldn't play big minutes at all. His per 36 numbers are okay. 11.5 points, or 8.8 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1.2 blocks, 46 and 77%. They're pretty good, and he is an okay guy. The role is the problem. The role that that Charlotte puts him in is the issue. Now, after two mediocre seasons, we saw his minutes jump from 17 to 24. I would hope that they go, all right, we need to see if Cody Zeller is our man here. Let's give him 29 to 30 minutes a game. He can give you 10 and 8. He can give you 1.3 blocks. He can give you 2.5 assists. He can give you good percentages. He increased his field goal percentage by 4% this season, and that could go up another 2 or 3% as he learns to shoot a bit more. He can hit threes, maybe. He didn't take many, but he does have range where he could extend out to be a three-point shooter. What is that like? Where does his value lie? I like him for dynasty leagues. I think there's a bit of value in him. I actually like him a lot more than Noah Vonleh. But the problem is, I just don't think the Hornets value him. That's where my concern is, that they played Marvin Williams over him last season. They drafted Vonleh 1 year after drafting Zeller with the fourth pick. I just don't think they really like him. I wouldn't be surprised to see him traded during the season, to be honest. Standard leagues, don't think you need to worry too much about Cody Zeller. 14-team leagues, yeah, probably. And dynasty leagues, yeah, I do think that he can develop into a solid player who gives you top 120 value in the next 2 to 3 seasons. Let's talk about Noah Vonleh now, who was the ninth pick in last year's draft. He played just 25 games, 3.3 points, 3.4 rebounds, not a lot else. 0.2 threes, 0.2 assists, 0.2 steals, 0.4 blocks, with a standard 40% rookie shooting. Those numbers aren't good. Head-to-head 384th, Roto 398th, didn't really ever show a huge amount, but it's because Williams and because Zeller were both there. Now, he's going to get more run in his second season, but I'm not buying it. I'm not buying into Noah Vonleh ever being a decent NBA player. I wouldn't be. If I own him in a dynasty league, I'd be seeing if someone thinks the opposite of me and I'd be trying to get rid of him. I could be way off on this, but I just don't see much from Noah Vonleh moving forward as being a real decent contributor to a good team. And the Hornets obviously want to be a good team. I just don't think Vonleh is the way to go to become. You know, he's not going to be a player who's playing a key role in a team becoming a good team. One thing he can do is hit three-pointers. So he could be, if he got 25 to 26 minutes, a 10-point, 7-rebound, 1.5-3 sort of guy, or 1 3-pointer-a-game guy, which is okay, but I just don't think the rest of his numbers really translate all that much to fantasy. Al Jefferson, the center. I had him in the top 20 preseason. He was coming off a top 20 season, and he was putrid. Per game, 72nd. Head-to-head total, 81st. Roto total, 78th. So not much difference between the two formats. But he wasn't Al Jefferson. He averaged 16.6 points, down from 21.8. 8.4 rebounds, down from 10.8. His assists dropped. His steals dropped. His field goal percentage dropped. His free throw percentage dropped. The only thing that went up were his block numbers. Now, he did play over 4 less minutes a game. He was injured with that sore knee, limiting him to 65 games. But the worrying thing to me is that in the last month of the season, he played 11 games. He was on a bit of a sore knee, but per game in that time, he ranked 142nd in head-to-head leagues. 13.8 points, 6.8 rebounds, 1.2 blocks, 0.6 steals, 46 and 63 is his percentages. A real, real down season from Al Jefferson. The silver lining here is that if he's healthy, And if he does take on his player option, which is $13.5 million, I would say he would. I don't think he'd want to go into free agency after a season like that. You could have a top 30 guy on your hands that you might be able to get late, like in around 50 to 55. If you can get him around there, he could be a bargain player that has a real bounce back, because he was dreadful. There's no doubt about that. Had a question come in from Luke Fraser on Facebook. Can Big Al Jeff turn it around next season after burning me in both my legs last season? Well, yes, I think he can. He might not be a 20 and 10 guy, but I think he can be a lot better than what he was last season. And I reckon you'd be able to get him much later. You're definitely not taking him inside the top 20. He's not going inside the top 20. You're going to be able to take him after guys like Gobert and Hassan Whiteside and probably Nerlens Noel. You'll be able to draft him after that in the 40s, in the 50s, maybe even in the 60s. That might be pushing it a little bit. But such is the drop that he had last season, I reckon you'd be able to get some good value on Al Jefferson. I'd be trying in dynasty leagues to try and trade from him low, like low ball offers. This is where you got to make the most of things in dynasty leagues. Guys who have had bad seasons and you think that there's a chance of turning them around, go in low and see if you can get something back from him. It might blow up in your face, but it also could be the move that turns your team into a championship team. The other center on this roster, Bismack Biyombo, who when Al Jefferson went down, he played well. There's no other way of putting it. He played well. He's not an offensive player. I think we all know that. His head-to-head value the last month was actually better than Jefferson's, 134th, whereas Jefferson was 142. But that's because of his defensive prowess. His last month, only 5 points a game, but he got you 7.3 rebounds and he got you 2.1 blocks a game at 48% shooting. Now, the shooting, that's not a big impact because it's only two or three attempts a game. But 8 rebounds, 2 blocks, they're useful numbers, but they're end-of-the-roster useful numbers. When he's giving you contributions in two categories, that's great, but what about the other six or the other seven categories? That's the problem with Biyombo. A real solid backup guy, a deep league guy when you want blocks. Even if he comes off and plays 18 minutes, he can expect 1 to 1.5 blocks, so deeper leagues need to consider him there. But standard leagues, not much there for him, I don't think. I did miss one player when I was talking power forwards, and that's Jason Maxiell. He's an unrestricted free agent. He was on a minimum contract last season. I don't imagine that he necessarily comes back with all the other power forwards here. He got 0.7 blocks in 14 minutes, which is good, but he does nothing else. We don't really need to talk about Jason Maxiell too much, although he played way too many minutes as well this season. Ranked at the end of the season as 371st in per game value. That's it for the Charlotte Hornets today. Make sure you check out the upcoming podcast. Going to be talking Miami Heat next, Indiana Pacers, and Utah Jazz. They're the next three podcasts that are coming. Also, in the coming days, going to have some information on the Red Rock Dynasty League. You're going to want to check that out if you want to be involved in it. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.